Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Damon Hodge, Public Information Coordinator for the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Las Vegas Valley Water District, and the Springs Preserve. The Springs Preserve is hosting the 16th annual Black History Month Festival next weekend to commemorate the contributions of African Americans to Southern Nevada's rich history and culture. Damon, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar with that beautiful piece of land out there in the north middle part of the valley, what is the Springs Preserve?
So the Springs Preserve, we like to call it the birthplace of Las Vegas. It's a 180-acre cultural institution, essentially. We have springs that where water was found thousands of years ago that helped really birth the city of Las Vegas and all Southern Nevada. There are a lot of cultural amenities on the preserve site. We have animals, we have gardens, we have a museum, the Nevada State Museum there as well. So it's really a great place for family, but also community connectivity.
Yeah, for sure. And how is the Springs Preserve connected to the Southern Nevada Water Authority and the Las Vegas Valley Water District?
So the Las Vegas Valley Water District owns and runs the Springs Preserve.
Okay. Now, tell us about the 16th annual Black History Month Festival, which is coming up next weekend.
Yeah, so the 16th annual Black History Month Festival is the largest and biggest Black History Month celebration here in the state of Nevada. We're very proud of the growth of the event over the last 16 years, growing from a few hundred attendees to last year, more than 4,000. It's really a community event, and the community has embraced this event each and every year. We provide something for everyone, whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old. We have a lot of great entertainment. We have educational speakers, craft activities for the kids, story time for the kids as well. And what is a festival without food? We have some great food that I'd love to talk about as we go along.
Awesome. And what kinds of entertainers are there as part of the performances that happen?
So we have everything from hip hop to neo soul to funk to gospel. This year, for the first time, we'll actually have the Second Baptist Church's choir there lifting their voices in praise. We also have members of the Delta Sigma Theta sorority, their ensemble. They're going to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is the Black National Anthem. So each year we try to bring something new and fresh and exciting to the festival in terms of entertainment. So that if you come 1 year, you'll see a lot of different entertainers. If you come the next, you'll see a totally different group. So we really tap into all the talent that's here in Southern Nevada.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what are some of the food selections that people could sample?
So we have Southern Pit Barbecue, which has some really phenomenal barbecue, Waffle Cafe Express, and the Funnel Cake Cafe, where you can get your funnel cakes and satisfy that sweet tooth if you have one. For the first time, we'll have Chef Jeff. That's Chef Jeff Henderson. He's with the Chef Jeff Project. Some people may know him from an interview on the Oprah Winfrey Show or from his reality show on the Food Network. He's going to have his food truck there. He's going to be making the fried chicken and all the sides.
Nice. And what are some of the activities for kids?
So we have multiple activities for the kids. We have story time. Casey Bourne, she is the author of Discoveries in the Sands. She will be reading her children's book several times throughout the festival. We also have craft activities for the kids. So each year we have a different activity for the kids to create something. 1 year it was creating the traffic lights. This year, it's creating actual airplanes, so they'll get materials to make those airplanes as well. Girls Rocket Science, that's a new organization to our festival. They'll be focused on STEAM activities, which highlight science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So we have lots of activities and fun for the kids, including face painters and caricature artists as well.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Now, just kind of connect the dots for me. Designing and creating a plane and doing rocket science, that all sounds super cool. How is it related to Black history?
So what we do is we look at famous African Americans in history and the craft activity. It's based on Elizabeth Coleman. She was an early American civil aviator and was the first African American woman to hold a pilot's license. So we thought this would be a great background for a craft activity for the kids. We like to tie our craft activities to education as well. So while the kids are having fun exercising their creative muscles, they also learn something as well. And with regards to Girls Rocket Science, this is an organization that was created to really empower girls around STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And it's created by a local African American woman who goes throughout the community, really talking about STEAM and exposing girls to opportunities and careers in the STEAM fields.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, now I know you have a different theme every year. So what's this year's theme for the Black History Month Festival?
So this year's theme is African Americans and labor. And we take the theme each year from the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, which is based in Washington, D.C. They set a national theme each year, and we mirror that theme in our Black History Month Festival. So again, the theme this year is African Americans and labor. And to honor that theme, we are honoring the late Hattie Canty. She was a stalwart on the front lines of both the labor rights and workers' rights movements here in Southern Nevada. And she also helped start the Culinary Center of Las Vegas, which is now known as the Culinary Training Academy. That was founded in the early 90s. And since then, it's trained more than 42,000 people in careers in the hospitality industry. So we're honoring the late Hattie Canty for her role in the workers' rights movement here in Southern Nevada.
Wow, that's fantastic. So it sounds like a lot of amazing events are going on as part of the Black History Month Festival next weekend. Where can people find out more about the festival or purchase tickets to attend?
Yeah, we encourage people to log on to springspreserve.org and type in Black History Month Festival. You'll learn more about the cost of the event as well as the different activities that are taking place. We really also encourage people to get their tickets early because this is the largest Black History Month Festival in Nevada. We expect upwards of 4,000 people to come out and really help us celebrate Black history because Black history is American history. And we really invite the entire community to come out. This is about connecting cultures, but also creating and sustaining our community here in Southern Nevada.
All right. So once again, that website is springspreserve.org, springspreserve.org. Of course, you can find out more about the Springs Preserve in general and why it's so important as part of the Las Vegas Valley, springspreserve.org. Also, though, you can find out more about the 16th annual Black History Month Festival, which is happening next Saturday, February 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Springs Preserve. You can find out all about the different activities and events, the performances, the food selections, everything that we've talked about today, celebrating Black history in Southern Nevada. So springspreserve.org is the place to go. And we've been speaking today with Damon Hodge. He's the public information coordinator for the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Las Vegas Valley Water District, and the Springs Preserve. And Damon, I really appreciate you being here and letting us know about this fantastic festival that's been going on for 16 years now and what it brings to the Las Vegas community and how people can celebrate the history of the Valley, because it's Las Vegas history, it's Southern Nevada history, it's all intertwined. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
After I lost my mom, I lost my way. Then I found youth advocate programs, YAP.
YAP gives communities alternatives to residential care, youth incarceration, and neighborhood violence. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn more at yapinc.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Warren Farrell, New York Times bestselling author of Why Men Are the Way They Are, and author of the new book, Rollmate to Soulmate, The Seven Secrets to Lifelong Love. Valentine's Day is next week, and Rollmate to Soulmate is a practical guide to help struggling couples revive their spark and sustain a loving relationship. Dr. Farrell, thank you so much for being here today.
Looking forward to talking with you.
So, what inspired you to write your new book, Rollmate to Soulmate, The Seven Secrets to Lifelong Love?
I was teaching couples communication courses for 30 years. And before that, I had been teaching courses based on books that I had written, like Why Men Are the Way They Are. And one slice of that Why Men Are the Way They Are course was on couples communication. And so this is 30 years ago, it was back in the day of letters for some people that may still remember what a letter is.
Mm-hmm.
And I get this letter from somebody in the course that said this, you know, this course was so helpful that I'm using it in my family business. So I thought that was very sweet. But then I looked at the bottom and I saw that it was this family business was, he was the president of Walmart. And so I figured if he can, you know, I had already been thinking about some things that I could use to expand the course. And so that inspired me to pursue that. And the big thing that was happening in the course was that every, you know, I was recommending to people that there not be a defensive reaction to personal criticism. And almost everybody had that problem. But practically speaking, while everybody agreed with me in the course, when they went home, the moment the criticism appeared, you know, the wisdom disappeared. And so I started to work on wondering whether it was possible to actually train people to be able to handle personal criticism without becoming defensive. And so for the next 10 years or so, I worked on that. And then I had people in the workshop come back to talk with me on a group phone call about 2 months to a year after the workshop and find out what worked and what didn't work. And then I began to perfect it until I was able to create a system where people actually could not only hear criticism without becoming defensive, but they could also, as they were being criticized, I had a way of helping them associate the criticism with an opportunity to be more deeply loved. And so that was when I felt I had something to contribute in book form.
What is that strategy to not be defensive in the face of personal criticism and actually turn it into something positive?
Because personal criticism, when you hear it, historically speaking, that was a potential enemy. And so it was functional to be defensive or even kill the enemy before the enemy killed you. So everybody that survived was basically trained to be defensive in response to criticism. And so first of all, it helps everybody to know that because they don't feel so personally guilty because of doing that. And then secondly, what I ended up creating, long story short, or medium, is something called a caring and sharing 2-hour period where only one concern that you have with your partner is shared. And before you share it, your partner alters their natural biologically defensive state by a series of mindsets. And so they prepare themselves to hear the criticism. So one mindset is what I call the love guarantee. And so the love guarantee is the person says out loud to the person about to share the criticism, when I provide a safe environment for your criticism, even if I completely disagree with it, even if you're sarcastic or loud or shouting at me, no matter how much you're shouting at me, no matter how sarcastic, no matter how much I disagree with it, if you know I will nevertheless provide a safe environment for you, you'll feel much more secure with me. You won't feel you have to walk on eggshells. And therefore, you'll feel more loved by me and therefore more love for me. So the more the person who's about to criticize you is, in your opinion, off base, the more you have an opportunity to provide that environment and deepen your love.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty powerful. Now, the subtitle to your book, Roommate to Soulmate, is The 7 Secrets to Lifelong Love. And that's one of the secrets, the caring and sharing practice. What are the other 6 secrets to keeping a relationship strong?
One is knowing how to appreciate your partner with discipline and specificity, and also as an art. So for example, the point behind this is that you really have no incentive to go through this process and this hard work of, you know, of doing the caring and sharing time if your reservoir of love is not filled, if you don't feel appreciated by your partner. So what I teach people how to do is not just to appreciate their partner, but also have a discipline in it. So my wife and I and everybody in the workshop sets aside a night per week where they just have about 10, 15 minutes where each of them appreciates the other one. But they learn to appreciate the other one, not in general, oh, I appreciate the meal you cooked, but rather very specifically. So not only did I appreciate the meal you cooked, but I really appreciated the way you, as you cooked it, the chicken was nice and moist. But I also, you got the skin very crisp. Or if it was maybe a turkey, you know, you put that dressing was so moist, or the spices were really excellent, but not just saying the spices were excellent, but guessing what those spices seemed to be. I think I tasted, you know, parsley, sage, maybe rosemary, maybe thyme, some other Simon and Garfunkel spice.
Right.
And you know, and so then your partner feels like really seen for what that appreciation is about, not just a general, you know, pull it off the shelf and say it quickly. And so part of that is the discipline of being specific, and part of that is the discipline of doing it frequently, or alternatively, the art of doing it in a different type of humorous way. So things are remembered when there's a little bit of anxiety. So let's say one of the places I teach this workshop is at Esalen. So let's say my wife drives to Esalen, let's say, and I'm saying, be careful here, be careful there, you know, because Esalen has a lot of curvy roads. And so then I realized afterwards that, you know, most of the things I said were be careful, be careful. So I might put a ticket on the car, a make-believe ticket on the car. So when she goes back to the car, she gets anxious for a moment. Oh my God, we have a ticket. But then as she looks at the ticket, it says something like, you know, thank you for driving me to Esalen so I could see the beautiful scenery while you drove. Or, you know, thank you for driving me so beautifully while I drove you crazy. So a little bit of humor and a little bit of anxiety. The reason for the little bit of anxiety is that we remember things longer when there is a little bit of anxiety. And obviously that's a virtue that can be taken to its extreme and become a vice, but attached to something.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's some pretty powerful stuff there. Now, the title of the book is Roommate to Soulmate, and I think most people know what a soulmate is, or they have their definition of what a soulmate is, but what's a roommate?
A roommate is somebody that you get into a relationship or a marriage, and let's say, okay, one person cooks and the other one makes a salad and cleans up afterwards, or one person raises money, one person raises children. You sort of develop roles and you think of things that you're particularly good at. For example, I'm really good at packing a car, and my wife is good at other things in relation to, you know, getting out. She does it more quickly than I do. And so we sort of develop those roles because we just each saw that each one was particularly good at one thing and the other one maybe wasn't so good. So that's the role mate. But the problem with that is that oftentimes, let's say you come into the kitchen and you say, gee, you know, could you put the dishes in the dishwasher rather than in the sink? And the other person might say, yeah, I'll put them in the dishwasher. But, you know, last week you left the dishes in the sink and I didn't say anything about it to you. But why do you always feel necessary to say it to me? And before you know it, you're off, you know, at an argument with each other. So the roles alone are helpful to people having an efficient life, but not deepening their love for each other. And so what a soulmate is somebody that, you know, really does all these unnatural things that I talk about in the Roommate to Soulmate book that involve being able to feel so that you don't have to walk on eggshells around your partner. You're able, when you feel something that's bothering you, you say, okay, on this couple of hours that we have set aside for our caring and sharing time, I have a 100% chance of being heard by my partner. So I'll save it for then, write it down, and I have trained them as to what to do during between the time that they feel that and when they actually have that caring and sharing time.
Okay. Why do relationships often turn sour or at least stale after a while?
Partially because the biggest single thing is the criticism aspect of things that, you know, you just feel like you're walking on eggshells and you can't say and be your real self. And when you can't be your real self and real heard, there's something that sort of stiffens inside of you and is not free like you were when you first met each other and had that, you know, that initial, you know, illusion of being a soulmate because you felt passion for each other. And it was also insecure. When you're insecure on a certain level and you feel physical tension and chemistry, you can really have a maximum amount of passion. So the criticisms is one thing. Another other is complaining. And so people often feel like, you know, they went to a restaurant, let's say, and at that restaurant, they say something like, oh, you know, the soup is a bit cold, or, you know, maybe the guy that served us was a little bit aloof. And if your wife or your husband recommended that restaurant, you feel like you're criticizing the soup or the service, but the person who recommended the restaurant feels like you're criticizing them. And so very frequently people feel, you know, criticized much more easily than we would expect. Another one is complacency. You know, when you the first time you met your partner, and you might have, you know, put on your makeup and or, you know, shaved your beard really carefully and selected your favorite wardrobe and the one that was you felt you were most impressive in. And if the person was coming over to your house, you maybe really cooked your favorite meal, the one that you felt would be most impressive, and so on. And so that was really, you showed all that attentiveness. But now let's say you're living together a year or two, and you're finding that you're wearing, you know, sloppy clothes and not doing your hair and serving leftovers, and it sort of feels like you're just being taken for granted. But then Saturday comes, and maybe you're going to a party, and suddenly you go, okay, let's see, you know, who are we going out with, and what type of clothes do you think they'll be wearing, and what do you think I'll look best in, and sweetie, what do you think about this clothes, you know, this dress or this suit or this shirt, or if they're coming over for dinner, you cook your favorite meal, you clean up the house, you get everything ready. Now, what is there about that's happening here? When other people see you, you're really making sure you're at your best. When your partner sees you, and so your partner feels like, you know, leftover meatloaf. But on the other hand, the complacency serves a positive purpose, which is that you feel you can be more relaxed and more yourself around your partner. You don't always have to make up all that stress and effort of getting everything ready. You can balance your life in other ways. So the solution to this is to have a caring and sharing session about what is the balance between, you know, how does it feel to me when you only prepare yourself in a positive way when company is coming, or, you know, et cetera. And on the other hand, how does it feel to me to be able to just relax around you like I can't around some company, for example? And so that requires a discussion, whereas many people, and, you know, sort of each of you knowing exactly how much complacency, when complacency works, when complacency doesn't work.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic advice. Okay. So we've really just hit on the tip of the iceberg in this book. There's so much value in these pages, chapter after chapter of advice and secrets to lifelong love. So where can people find out more or even get a copy of your new book, Roommate to Soulmate, The 7 Secrets to Lifelong Love?
Yes, fortunately, Amazon just put it on sale at 30% off, so it's pretty cheap. But actually, I'll probably be the only author in your history that will ever say this, but if you only read the book, it will help you for a while, but the wisdom will disappear when the criticism appears. And so I persuaded my publisher to make available through a QR code in the book an online couples communication course that it lasts about 8 or 9 hours that you and your partner can do together. And when you do the course, you are practicing exercises that I guide you through. It costs $97, but it was a big discount from what it used to cost. And that is what I really recommend. I think the book will be helpful. But as I was mentioning before, because this is everything I teach in Roommate to Soulmate is biologically unnatural to do, you really have to readjust your brain's neurons. And you do that by practicing a different type of behavior than the natural response, let's say, to criticism.
Okay, awesome. And what's your website in case they want to look at some of your other books and information?
WarrenFarrell.com. That's W-A-R-R-E-N. And then the last name is Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L. It's not E like Will Farrell. I'm not that funny.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website is WarrenFarrell.com. WarrenFarrell.com, Farrell with an A, F-A-R-R-E-L-L. warrenfarrell.com. And you can also pick up his latest book, Roommate to Soulmate, The 7 Secrets to Lifelong Love, on Amazon or wherever you like to get your books. And inside, you'll find the QR code for that online couples communication course that you can take with your significant other. So once again, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local booksellers, or take a look at the website, warrenfarrell.com. And of course, we've been speaking today with Warren Farrell, Dr. Warren Farrell. He's the author of the new book, Roommate to Soulmate, The 7 Secrets to Lifelong Love, as well as numerous other books that you can also see on his website. And again, we've really only scratched the surface here. We talked about a few of the 7 secrets to lifelong love, but there are more secrets to discover and exercises and tips and advice in the book. So, Roommate to Soulmate, The 7 Secrets to Lifelong Love. And Dr. Farrell, I really appreciate you being here just in time for Valentine's Day, sharing these tips and advice for couples to improve their relationships, but also on an ongoing basis. Of course, this is a lifelong journey, and the advice that you share is absolutely necessary all year round for many years to come. So thank you so much for your time today.
Such a pleasure. You're so articulate and such a good listener, too. That's really a nice combination.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Leslie Cho, director of the Cleveland Clinic's Women's Cardiovascular Center. February is American Heart Month, and Cleveland Clinic's annual Love Your Heart Heart Health Survey examined factors that can silently impact heart health. Dr. Cho, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what did Cleveland Clinic's 2025 Love Your Heart Survey reveal about heart health risks?
So majority of our patients knew that stress increased our risk of having heart disease, but 40% of our patients did not know that alcohol, lack of sleep, pollution, and smoking increase their risk of heart disease.
Interesting. Okay. And why are these factors so often overlooked by the general public?
I think, you know, for years they've been told that alcohol may be good for their heart, but actually data is quite clear. Alcohol increases our blood pressure. Alcohol increases our risk for atrial fibrillation. It's really not that great for our heart. And of course, we're beginning to learn a lot about sleep. Lack of sleep increases our risk for high blood pressure. Lack of sleep makes us hungry and, you know, makes us gain weight. There are all these sort of new and emerging factors that are really critically important. You know, our body is all sort of tied together. If you affect one part, the other part's going to get messed up. And unfortunately, having lack of sleep directly impacts your cardiovascular health.
Yeah. Now, when we're talking about lack of sleep, how much sleep do we actually need?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. You know, some people need less sleep than other people. But for a majority of people, you should be getting at least somewhere between 7 hours. Now, it doesn't matter if you're getting it like, you know, people are worried that they don't sleep all the way through. They wake up at 2 a.m. and they can't, you know, they don't go back to sleep. Or some people get up at 2 a.m., but they can go back to sleep. But in total, you should be getting somewhere around 7 hours of sleep. But the more important thing than just the number is the quality of sleep. You should be waking up feeling refreshed. Many of us are sleeping, but we're not getting that refreshing sleep where we're in our REM cycle. And so, you know, for those patients, they should be worked up for things like sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is a very potent risk factor for having heart disease.
Interesting. Okay, so quality over quantity.
Yes.
Cool. And what should consumers know before adding vitamins and other supplements to their daily routine?
That's a great question. You know, 97% of our respondents thought that taking vitamins lower their risk of heart disease. Unfortunately, I wish it was true, but it doesn't decrease our risk. Multivitamin does not. Vitamin C does not. Vitamin E may actually increase our risk. And fish oil can also increase our risk of having atrial fibrillation. That's when the top part of your heart doesn't beat in conjunction with bottom part of your heart, and it can increase bleeding. So before you start any supplements, I know we think it's natural, so natural means safe, but that's actually not true. before we start our supplements, it's really important to talk to your doctor and ask them whether it's safe for you to start these medications.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, we're not going to go to the doctor every time we want to try a new supplement or vitamin. So how can we better navigate the claims that we actually see on the labels?
Oh, Heather, that's a great question. It's really important to be an educated purveyor of the internet. And there's just so much information out there. But there are reputable information that's actually good. For example, the American Heart Association website, the Cleveland Clinic website, the American College of Cardiology websites. There are reputable, fact-checked information out there that's really important. You know, there's so much information in this modern day. So confusing, even for physicians to navigate. But there are some really good websites that people can go to figure out fact from fiction.
Yeah, for sure. Now, when it comes to medication rather than supplements, how often do Americans skip their doses of heart medications?
You know, I was shocked to see that 62% of our patients skip their medications. Now, there are some medicines that you have to take every day. Otherwise, we have to restart the whole process. And there are medications you cannot even skip one dose. And it was shocking for me as a physician to see that 62% of our patients are skipping pills. Now, whether that's from side effects or whether it's because of whatever they heard on the internet or from their family, it's really important to talk to your doctor before you stop taking medications or start skipping your medications.
Okay. Now, sometimes when you skip a single dose, which might be by accident, you know, just saying, but sometimes when we skip a medication dose, there's no immediate symptoms. So how can we improve medication compliance knowing that?
You're right. I mean, I've often skipped a dose of antibiotics because I just forgot because that's not in my routine. But there are medications in whom really you can't even skip one dose. And those are medications that have to do with rhythm and blood thinning. But pill boxes are a very easy way to remind yourself to take your pills. So there are these, you know, weekly pill boxes that are like $2 that you can buy at your local drugstore that is an easy reminder for you to take your pills. The other thing is having your pills in an area where you see them. So for example, in your dining room table, in your kitchen, so you're reminded to take your pills. Some people put them in their bathrooms where they, you know, wash their hands so they can see the medication so they can take the medication. But I think for majority of our patients, that pill box is a real good reminder.
Yeah, excellent tips. And what should we know about screening for genetic markers?
You know, 20% of us have elevated lipoprotein little a, and that lipoprotein little a is a genetic risk factor for having premature heart disease and premature heart attacks. If you had it or if your family members have premature heart disease, it's really important to talk to your doctor about getting tested. Very few people in America are tested for LP little a.
And besides talking with our physicians, which of course is important, where can listeners go for more information?
They can go to clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website is clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart, clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheart. Plenty of information there about heart health, including the 2025 Love Your Heart survey results. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Leslie Cho. She's the director of the Cleveland Clinic's Women's Cardiovascular Center. And Dr. Cho, I really appreciate you being here and letting us know more about this latest survey that you did and what it revealed about our heart health. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Roger A. Krohn, President and CEO of Scouting America. The organization is adopting a new name while celebrating 115 years of helping young people prepare for life, focusing on character development and values-based leadership training. Roger, thank you so much for being here today.
Hello, Heather. Great to be here.
So what exactly is Scouting America?
Well, Scouting America is the organization that most people know by Boy Scouts of America. And we've evolved our name and changing our name on our birthday because our organization has evolved over its 115-year history. We now welcome all youth. And because of that, 200,000 girls have joined our program. And we want a name that reflects the audience that we serve today and the customer set that we want to serve in the future.
That's awesome. How are you celebrating Scouting America's 115th birthday?
Well, we're taking a couple weeks. We're going around the country. We're talking to people like you. And again, thanks for the opportunity. At local levels, they're meeting with their local media. We actually are going to light up some buildings and some monuments, red, white, and blue. We're doing a New York swing. And then we're actually doing some groundbreakings of new signage. So we'll take down our old name. We're going to put up the name Scouting America, and we'll do that next week. And we've got a new flag, and you know, we've got a new brand. And we actually have one of our spokespersons who's an athlete who's actually doing some things associated with the Super Bowl. So we're going to get out there as best as we can.
That's great. Now, you mentioned the name change. You mentioned some of the modern aspects of membership. But how has the Scouting America programming itself evolved over those 115 years?
Yeah, well, anything that's over a century old needs to evolve to stay current and relevant to the kids in America. We started at the high school level. We added the Cub Scout program literally 95 years ago. We've continued to keep our historical outdoor activities like camping and hiking and fishing, but we've added to it modern technologies, rocketry, drones, digital technology. We now have an artificial intelligence merit badge that's in the work. But we've also changed our target customers, and we now welcome all kids into our program. And so just really, really thrilled that any child in America can come to our program and learn the character, leadership, citizenship, and personal fitness skills that we teach.
When you say kids, what's the age range to be part of Scouting America?
Yeah, you can start at five, at age five, which is either kindergarten or first grade. Our Scouts BSA program goes up through age 18. And then we have a couple programs for older youth that go up to age 21. Our Explorer, our Venturing NRC Scouts program go all the way to 21.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, you mentioned a lot of great new programs and the traditional ones, camping, fishing, hiking. How is Scouting America implementing safety measures to ensure that scouts are safe and protected while they're doing all those activities?
Yeah, you know, safety is our number one priority for our youth, and we have evolved our safety practices over our century. We believe we are at the top of providing a safe environment for all of our kids. And we really look at it in two ways. One is the traditional aquatic safety, hiking safety. You know, we have a scout knife, and you know, we provide that kind of training. But, you know, of course, the world has evolved, and keeping kids safe in places like the internet is now really important to us. And so this is a journey. We've evolved our training. We have a two adult rule, so no child is ever alone with an adult. We always have two adults. We do background checks. We actually have a no-fly list for adults. And then we've gone digital, so we have anonymous text reporting. We're making the assumption most kids have a phone. We want to use the phone as part of keeping people and kids safe.
That's fantastic. All right, so where can listeners go for more information about Scouting America and your various scouting programs for the 115th birthday and beyond?
Right, like everyone, we've gone digital, so scouting.org is where you would start. If you're interested in joining, beascout.org will connect you to a unit in your local community, but also just putting scouting into a search engine. Our kids are so great. They take videos, they take pictures, they do posting. On any kind of social media, you'll find we have a YouTube page. But if you actually want to experience what it's like to be on a camp out, you can pull some of that social media down and experience firsthand the fun that kids are having.
All right. So once again, those websites, scouting.org tells you more about Scouting America, all the different programs that are available, scouting.org. You can also find them all over social media. And if you're interested in joining, or you have a child who is interested in joining, beascout.org is the place to go. Beascout.org. And we've been speaking with Roger A. Krohn. He's president and CEO of Scouting America. And Roger, I really appreciate you being here, not only to help celebrate those 115 years of accomplishment, but also to let us know the changes and the modernization and how the organization is listening and moving with the times with your great programs that have been so established for so long. So thank you so much for your time today.
Great. You're welcome. It was great to be here. Thank you.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
The big games have only gotten bigger, and the money in sports has only gotten bigger. I'm Odyssey News reporter Dave Cohen. This is Big Games, Big Money, an Odyssey conversation. This year's Super Bowl is being held at the Caesars Superdome here in New Orleans, a frequent site for the NFL's championship game. Once again, it's ready for the big game. We're at the Morial Convention Center here in downtown New Orleans, which is just one of the many sites with so much going on related to the Super Bowl. Here is where there are literally miles of exhibition space that have been dedicated to the NFL experience, Radio Row, and so many activities for fans to come and participate in leading up to the big game. Michael Hecht is the appointee of Louisiana's governor to coordinate all of the Super Bowl activities here in New Orleans. And Michael, that's a mountain of an appointment for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was not on my bingo card a year ago. But, you know, when the governor asked, I jumped at it. I was in New York when we went after the Olympics with Dan Doctoroff. And I understood from that experience that even though we didn't win the Olympics in New York, it served as a catalyst for so many game-changing investments in the city, for things like the High Line, for massive rezoning, for new stadiums for the Yankees and the Mets, for new subway lines. So I understood that a sporting event could be a forcing function for so many things beyond the event itself.
We talked about here in the convention center, so much going on with tens of thousands of fans participating in the activities here. But this is just one of many sites. I walked over here through the downtown New Orleans area between the Superdome and the convention center. And just to see all the stages set up for outdoor venues, for music concerts during the lead up to the Super Bowl, to see all the venues with special events surrounding the Super Bowl. There's a whole lot of economic development going on that's not even directly part of what the NFL is doing here in New Orleans.
Yeah, you could say the direct impact might be $500 million. That's the t-shirts and hot dogs and beers. But then you get the indirect benefit of everything happening around it. But the real benefit is, I was with Roger Goodell in D.C. last week, and he talked about the 200 million people around the world that are going to see this game. The value of that, the goodwill, the brand benefit, you can actually calculate it, and it's magnitudes more. It's actually in the billions of dollars of value. So we not only want to have a great game, we want to project a New Orleans to the world that looks great, that feels great, and that welcomes people back after the game.
We know that there was $650 million in improvements put into the Superdome to attract the Super Bowl back to New Orleans. But just where we're standing, I can see the Four Seasons. They wanted to be completely renovated, reopened, and ready to go for the Super Bowl. Caesars built a brand new hotel and completely renovated and rebranded their casino. Billions of private dollars have been spent getting ready for this game as well.
That's absolutely true. In fact, if you look all through downtown, we calculate about $3 billion of investment that's happened recently. And there was no question that this game, February 9th, 2025, was the goal, was the deadline. And so when people ask, you know, why do you go after major events like this? The point is that it's catalytic. It's catalytic for public investment. It's catalytic for private investment. And the benefit, if you do it right, will be enjoyed by residents for a decade or more after the event is over.
And you're directly overseeing millions of dollars in infrastructure improvements, roads, bridges, streets, lighting, all kinds of public dollars invested in getting ready for making New Orleans look great for this game.
And that's right. So some of this stuff is literally pedestrian, like sidewalks, but some of it is murals by national and world famous artists. And so these are things that are going to beautify the city, that are going to exemplify our culture. And again, they're going to add value for decades or more to come. The Super Bowl is no more what it used to be, where it's just one big game. Now it's almost like a World's Fair or a mini Olympics. You know, that's what we're going to see here.
Michael Heck, Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry's Super Bowl coordinator. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'll see you at the game.
It's a citywide celebration as New Orleans is welcoming the Super Bowl. Everywhere you look around the city and surrounding region, there are special events, huge gatherings, street parties, concerts, and a lot of money being spent.
We're expecting a really, really good bump for the entire city. Everybody should do very well.
Superdome Management Team Vice President Doug Thornton says hotels are packed. So are restaurants, bars, venues, museums, other attractions, and streetcars. And we're here in downtown New Orleans, standing right in between the Superdome and the Convention Center, which isn't a bad walk. And Jay Cicero is here with the New Orleans Sports Foundation as New Orleans hosts a record-tying 11th Super Bowl. Jay, how have you been so successful in attracting Super Bowls over the years here to New Orleans? Why the Crescent City?
New Orleans is obviously a fan favorite and an NFL favorite. However, it takes a lot of work in a bid process to remain competitive with other cities who have either new stadiums or who have the desire to attract a Super Bowl to their city. So obviously the ambiance of New Orleans, our unique culture, history, the French Quarter, walking distance are all assets. But now it takes a competitive bid.
So you're blessed that you have a city that has, 30,000 hotel rooms within walking distance to all the major attractions where the game will be played, where fans will spend time. But you also have to make some pretty lofty promises, and you did this time as well, to the league to get them to bring the game back.
We absolutely made a lot of promises. You have to commit to a lot of things.
This time around, had to tell the league you'd do $650 million in upgrades to the Superdome, amongst the other commitments made to get the game to come back here a record 11th time. Why is it worth all of that work and all of that coordination to bring the game back so time after time?
Well, the Super Bowl is a driving force to get projects done. A renovation of the Superdome is not only just for the Super Bowl, but it's for the regular season Saints games. It's for the Bayou Classic. It's for the Essence Festival. It's for the New Orleans Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. And so on all the other events that happen in the Superdome each year. And so when you look at it like that, that the Super Bowl is this driving force. It's been the driving force to get $25 million worth of street infrastructure and other infrastructure projects done here in New Orleans. And so those will be here for decades. And so if that's what it takes to get all this done, to have a Super Bowl, then so be it.
Superdome General Manager Evan Holmes says they essentially had to gut and rebuild the interior of the Superdome to compete with all the new stadiums around the league that also want Super Bowls.
Frankly, excited to see what the new Superdome can do with the Super Bowl compared to when they were here in 2013. Two really completely different buildings.
Cicero says that construction project and all of the others are well worth it.
Well, it is a huge economic impact. There's no doubt about that. And in 2013, the last time we hosted it, it was $480 million economic impact. It's a big number. It certainly will be bigger this time around. We don't know exactly what it's going to be, but that's a big number in itself. The other impact is the media impact, and it's grown over the years. This is my fourth Super Bowl, and from 1997, there were 3,000 credentialed members of the media. Now there are 6,000 credentialed members of the media that will be here all week. Those types of opportunities only come along with an event like the Super Bowl.
Experts say that kind of exposure on TV, radio, the internet, social media, and print will bring millions of visitors for years to come, spending more and more money and keeping the economic party going far into the future. From construction crews to musicians, hotel and restaurant workers to security personnel, caterers to entertainers and artists to laundry services, Super Bowl impact is putting extra money in many pockets.
It's awesome to have a Super Bowl here. We're going to make some money.
Sierra Gramillion works at a local family-owned party rental supplier. She's reaping the benefits.
At CCI Productions, a local business that specializes in printing, the couple of dozen employees have been working for months to make banners that will hang everywhere from inside the Superdome and around town for the Super Bowl to completely covering skyscrapers with 40-story murals, ads, and marketing.
It's cool to see it kind of all come together and knowing how many people put the hard work into it to make it happen.
Owner Paul Utterback says the big game brings big money to small business.
We'll do, 75% of our yearly revenue in 4 months.
So at the end of the year, how much do you think you're further ahead because the Super Bowl came to town?
Probably 50%. Yeah, it's an incredible boost, and it's an incredible undertaking.
Dave Nelson at True Value Rental echoes that.
Yes, we've started ramping this up back in September, and we've continued on. Now that it's here, it's kind of crazy. We've got a lot of things happening, but yes, it's definitely a huge impact to our business.
Both say it also means additional revenue for their employees.
We've been preparing this for probably 3 years, so everybody here is bought in. Everybody does make more money. You know, everybody, you know, makes a lot of overtime, but it's not without sacrifice, right? So we've had a really good buy-in from everybody here on our team, and it's certainly a boom to everybody.
Utterback says all of the extra income is also rippling through the community as they buy more supplies, utilize more local services, and everyone makes more money and spends more money around town. He also says the exposure will help into the future.
The impact to small business is not just 1 year, right? Hopefully these things are catalyst and bedrock for a lot of people to build their business on.
And while many of the workers are indeed savoring the additional income, Gramillion notes she's ready for a break.
A lot of work, but we are excited and it's beautiful.
Many are already asking, how soon can the game come back again? But one thing we do know is next year's game, Super Bowl 60, won't be back in New Orleans. It'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area at Levi's Stadium, the home of the 49ers. Odyssey News reporter Mike DeWald is there with a look ahead to next year's game.
That's only part of what will be a very busy year in the Bay Area.
We will be the only region to ever host a Super Bowl and a World Cup in the same year. No one has ever done that, and it's unlikely that anybody will ever do it again.
That's Zaylene Jen Muhammad. To many, she's simply Z. She heads up the Bay Area Host Committee, and it's her job to get these massive events to come to the Bay. It's a challenging and highly competitive process. What major city wouldn't want to host something the size of the Super Bowl?
I think people understand that for like the Olympic Games, you know, they make a really big deal about it, but that exists for most major sporting events.
Big events also require big money to get off the ground. For that, the Bay Area Host Committee is leaning on big companies like Meta and EA Sports.
We have a ways to go. We still need the corporate community to be involved. Three events in 18 months is a big, big task.
NFL players use a playbook. Well, the host committee's job is to draw up the plays to make a complicated event like the Super Bowl work.
They look at the host committee and say, okay, how are you going to localize those requirements? Where are we going to host our fan zone? How are we going to get people from, in the Super Bowl's case, from the city or the North Bay all the way to the South Bay for the game?
On the plus side, at least the Super Bowl has the advantage that there's a playbook to follow.
For the FIFA World Cup that hasn't been here in 30 years, that becomes a lot harder.
Depending on the draw, Jen Muhammad says the World Cup has the potential to be the equivalent of multiple Super Bowls over just a matter of days.
Multiple training sites, fan zones, celebration areas, etc. And so that becomes a little bit harder because now our role is to actually teach.
His overall effort is fairly unorthodox. The Bay Area Host Committee bringing together executives from all the local pro sports teams with common purpose.
To be honest, that's rare because these are teams that typically compete with each other.
So for all of this work, what's the payoff in the end?
If all we do is operate the event itself, we actually fail as an organization. We need to do more. It's our responsibility to do more.
Jen Muhammad says she hopes people are better off than they were because these events were here.
I want it to be about how, you know, the story of someone who worked the event is now back in the labor pool in a long-term career path that they didn't think was possible. I want that headline.
Oh yeah, and the bragging rights are pretty good too.
You know, I talk about swagger a lot, of like starting to pick your head up a little bit and say, hey, I'm proud of my city because this is what we're doing now. And you're getting to experience some new things, some new energy, some new life, some new experiences, some new activation that should make you feel like, hey, this is an awesome place to be.
This has been Big Games, Big Money, an Odyssey Conversation, produced by Michelle Fredrigill and Dennis Foley. You can get the best in news, sports, and talk from your favorite radio stations like this one and more content like Odyssey Conversations anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app. For all of us at Odyssey News, I'm Dave Cohen.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. You have the power to protect your car, remove your valuables, roll up your windows completely, and always lock your doors and take your keys or fob. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, February 10th at 8 p.m. benefiting the First Friday Foundation, and Monday, February 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Charity Series of Poker Tournament. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Springs Preserve is hosting the 16th annual Black History Month Festival to commemorate the contributions of African Americans to Southern Nevada's rich history and culture next Saturday, February 15th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Springs Preserve. This year's theme is African Americans and Labor, and the festival features fun for the whole family. Find out more details or get your advance tickets at springspreserve.org. That's springspreserve.org. And the Las Vegas Natural History Museum is hosting their third annual Mystery at the Museum with a Lewis Carroll Wonderland theme this year on Saturday, February 22nd from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Las Vegas Natural History Museum, 900 Las Vegas Boulevard North. A Wonderland Mystery at the Museum is an age 18-plus event, and you can get your tickets or find out more at lvnhm.org. That stands for Las Vegas Natural History Museum, lvnhm.org.